Third and final hour of Sports Call getting started right now on Tiger 95.9 FM and the Tiger Communications app. JJ Jackson inside the studio with Tom Peavy and Javon Cutler on this Wednesday. Hope that everybody's had a great day so far. I know that we have, and we're excited to start the final hour of today's show by going to our Auburn Bank phone line and bringing on a longtime friend of the program, none other than ESPN and the SEC Network's very own Ryan McGee, kind enough to join us on today's show. Ryan, we appreciate the time. What in the world's going on for you, my friend?
I am. I'm trying not to start packing too early to go to Hoover because I think all of us are so excited. I was just talking to the sports information director of Arkansas a few minutes ago, and we all agree we're not entirely sure what we're going to be able to do or where we're going to be able to do it, but we're just glad we're going to be there. And so I'm excited about it. I was texting with Marty a minute ago, and we'll be recording our we'll get back to recording our coaches specials, our talking season specials that we did for a couple of years and didn't get to do last year, obviously. And so, yeah, I'm just it's interesting too because I think about this, and this relates to Auburn. But, you know, I remember a year ago we're all like, well, you know, no schools are going to make a coaching change because you just financially it just doesn't make any sense. They didn't sell any tickets and all that stuff, and the SEC made four. And so you got the four new guys this year, and then you've got the four new guys from a year ago.
Right.
And, yes, I'll include Lane Kiffin in that. You know, he had his 1 year at Tennessee. But you know, to me it's eight new guys because did you really coach a season in the SEC if you didn't have to go to Hoover and get on the escalator and answer questions? And so my feeling is that it's not just four rookie coaches we're breaking in. It's eight.
I don't think you've truly experienced SEC football unless you've gone on that escalator, McGee.
Nah, you guys know this. I brought my wife down there a couple of years ago because I'm romantic like that, right? And I brought her down there a couple of years ago because our daughter was at camp. I'm like, well, just come on now. I just want her to see it. And she came in on like day two, and she got on the escalator and she rode up and got her credentials and she came back down and she walked past Radio Row, and she called me. She goes, she walked into the studio. She goes, wow, there really are two Bear Bryants here. I go, yeah. She goes, and there really is a guy who has a dog painted in the Auburn colors. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I didn't make any of that up, babe. These guys, they're here every year. So it's, if you haven't been on an escalator, yeah, it's like we were robbed, right? I mean, we have yet to experience Mike Leach.
Yeah,
at SEC Media Days, and now we're finally going to get that next week. And so it's I'm looking forward to all his Civil War lectures.
You truly are the romantic, McGee, aren't you? Credentialed as McGee's wife. I mean, wow.
To this day, man, she talks about the Galleria and the thing is, you know, I didn't take her when it was in Atlanta. You know, I took her when it was at Hoover. And so yeah, it was. And the strangest thing happened too is back then I filled in for Feinbaum a lot, and I was on Feinbaum 20 shows a year and. This weird thing happened when my wife was with me that everybody kept saying, well, now, where do you live in Birmingham? I'm like, I don't live in Birmingham. They're like, well, yeah, you do. I'm like, no, I don't. Like, they would argue with me. No, you live in Birmingham. No, I don't. I promise you guys, I do not live in Birmingham. And my wife finally, she to this day accuses me of having a secret family in Birmingham that she didn't know about. But, yeah, her on the merry-go-round in the food court. We'll always have that.
Yeah. Well, and there's I didn't know this until just a little bit ago. I guess they're not allowing any of the fans into the lobby of the hotel, so that's going to be a little bit different. I guess there's going to be a spot outside for the fans, but
yeah, they'll be in the parking lot. Yeah.
Two Bear Bryants will be in the lot.
And you know the deal too. They're going to figure out a way to get. I mean, you know, like dude, and y'all know who it is, and I don't know his name, but there's the guy with the Auburn dog, the little yeah. Yippy dog that's painted in Auburn colors.
Right.
And that guy ain't credentialed. But all I know is that by like day two, he's like sitting on Radio Row. I'm like, how the hell did you get back here? And the two, you know, the two fake Bear Bryants, those guys are brothers.
Yeah.
And they just walk around, you know, like we're at their hotel. So I have a feeling that the crazies, the guy with the ring head, the crazies will find their way back to us somehow.
You just find a way to drop little nuggets and responses that then need follow-up questions and that sort of thing. And I guess forgive me for not knowing this, but I want to hear some stories from days where Ryan McGee has to sit in Feinbaum's chair. What is that like?
Yeah. Well, I haven't done it in a while because I'll say this about one thing about the COVID is Paul's on every day. Paul's like the Cal Ripken of his own show now. Like, he doesn't miss shows. But back in the day, when Paul first moved to Charlotte, which is where he's been based out of, where SEC Network is based out of, when he first moved back here, gosh, 6 years ago, whatever it was, Paul was really good to me and let me fill in for him a lot. And what was interesting was that eventually the Fine Bomb callers, the hardcore callers, they figured out that I went to Tennessee. And they didn't like that very much. But what I didn't realize was these people have been listening to Paul for 30 years. They didn't know that he went to Tennessee. And so they all just assumed he's like an Alabama guy. And so I had to remind everybody that, you know, Paul Feinbaum has won the Distinguished Alumni Award from the University of Tennessee. I have not. So, no, it's filling in. And it was interesting, too, because there was some of the real, like Jim and some of the real hardcore people, they refused to call in when I was on the show. And I would start calling them out. And they would call and complain about me calling them out, but they would not want to be on the show. And so I kind of developed my own group of Feinbaum callers. But yeah, sitting in that, I tell you this, that's a long time, boys. I mean,
I can't imagine.
Tip of the cap to y'all. You guys crank out so many hours of content, and Marty and I do 3 hours a week, and we're exhausted. And Paul sits there for what, 4 hours a week, a day, 5 days a week
by himself.
I can't do it. Yeah, he didn't even drink caffeine. Like, yeah. I don't even know how he does it. I'd have a Red Bull IV out there if I had to do that show every day.
We've been fortunate to expand to 3 hours within this past year, celebrating the 25th year that this show has been in existence, which is outstanding. But at least there's multiple voices that we're all kind of playing off one another in and out throughout the week and that sort of thing. But yeah, the Cal Ripken of radio. I love that. Four hours by yourself every day.
What I learned was that Paul just get up and leave. Like, I remember I would be in the building, and this is back when it was a three-hour show, and I'd be in the building, and depending on who the caller was, Paul might just get up and leave and go to the bathroom. And, like, you know, I'm in the hallway, and I can hear, you know, I can hear, like, Squirrel or Jim or somebody yammering on the radio, and Paul's in the hallway, like, getting a glass of water. And he just has figured out with certain callers that if you really listen to him, he ain't listening about half the time. Like, the caller will get done, he'll be like, well, thanks for calling, and he'll move on. And I can tell immediately he's not listening. So, yeah, it's but yeah, no, he's in great shape, always has been, and you have to be if you're going to sit in that chair for 4 hours a day.
What have you heard about Brian Harsin, McGee, and sort of how this first couple of months at Auburn has been, and what are you most looking forward to in terms of getting the chance to see him at SEC Media Days next week?
Well, I'm just anxious to talk to him. I haven't had a chance to talk to him a whole lot and a little bit of communication with him, but I haven't really sat down and gotten to know him. And one of the great things about when Marty and I do these Marty McGee talking season specials is, you guys know this, we don't really ask a ton of football questions. You know, I want to know, we started a couple of years ago, we did this whole biscuits or cornbread thing. And to me, that kind of sums up the conversations I like to have with these guys. I'm going to have plenty of time, you know, when we hit the fall and to talk football. But I'm really curious to get to know him personally. But for me, I mean, the biggest challenge for him is, I mean, he's got talent. I mean, that's the thing is, a lot of guys are getting a new job and the cupboard's bare. And the reality is, you know, Auburn's got talent. I mean, he's inheriting Bo Nix, for heaven's sakes. And so I think that the big thing for him is, you know, the details of it. You know, usually when you're coming in and you're a head coach, it's big, giant, broad strokes. We're changing the offense, and we're changing the defense, and we got to go out and completely replenish the talent and this and that, so on and so. But for me, I think his job is kind of fine-tuning. I mean, the stat that blew me away when I was looking at stuff was that Auburn was 90th in time of possession last year.
Yeah.
90th. And so, to me, that's the perfect example of it. For Brian Harsin, your job is to tweak those kinds of numbers. All right, you know, we got to have the ball more. You know, we got to figure out a way for sustained drives. And so, it's I'm really, really anxious to see, you know, how that goes. And honestly, next week I'm just anxious just to get to know him a little bit and maybe ask him some questions about him, and then I can ask him the Auburn football questions later in the fall.
And for Brian Harsin's background, sort of, I believe it's drag racing in his family,
yeah.
McGee, and sort of
your
days in the auto sports world. I think you got a perfect setup there.
Yeah, no, it's Marty and I can smell gasoline and nitro on people. Like, we could tell immediately if they're real racing people or if they're fake it. I tell you a story. So years ago, we were doing we used to do a show on ESPNU called The Experts, and it was like eight guys on the set. It was like seven former football players and me, like the writer nerd. And I remember Joey Galloway was on the set, and he kept staring at me, and I didn't know Joey at all. And Joey had just retired from the NFL. And when the show was over with, Joey walked up and he goes, man, I love your work. I'm like, thanks. I go, really? He said, yeah, because I'm a huge NASCAR fan. And I'm like, okay. You know, they all say that. And then you say, well, who's your favorite driver? And they all say Dale Jr. Or at the time they all say Danica, Jeff Gordon. I said, who's your favorite driver? He goes, Matt Kenseth. Wow. I'm like, damn, he's a fan. Like, nobody fakes that. And so, Marty and I can smell nitro and gasoline on guys. So as soon as Harson sits down, we're going to hit him with something about straight line racing.
Well, the thing I'm curious about Harson, I saw he and his whole family were at the Indy 500. So maybe he's an open wheel guy. Is he a NASCAR guy or is he more the open wheel? I mean,
I don't know. Well, I go to the Indy 500 every year for ESPN. And I tell you this. So I learned that about Kevin Sumlin. Kevin Sumlin is a hardcore motorsports fan.
Right.
And the reason I know that is because he grew up in the Indianapolis area. The reason I know that is because I was at the hotel waiting on my Uber, and all of a sudden this guy goes, what's up, man? And I look, and it's Kevin Sumlin. And I figured he was there as like a dignitary for the race or whatever. No, his family goes to the Indy 500 every single year. And so, yeah, it's you talk about the football people who love racing, man. These are my people. And so I'm excited to talk to Harson.
Talking about NASCAR real quick, what was the controversy regarding the repaving of Atlanta Motor Speedway? It seems like that has not been a very popular thing about them repaving Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Well, and it's even more than a repave. They're going to reconfigure it.
Oh, they're completely
reconfigured. Yeah, so there's going to be – they're absolutely going to repave it, which they need to do. That place happened – I remember the last time it was paved and refigured was 1997. I mean, I've been covering racing a long time, and all Spurs, I remember when they did that then. And what they're going to do is they're going to add a little more banking. And when I talk to drivers, what they tell me is it's just going to make the track a lot more narrow. And so the hope is to create more side-by-side racing because, quite frankly, the racing hasn't been great at Atlanta, and the finishes haven't been great at Atlanta for a while now. And so so that's their plan. But, yeah, anybody that thinks it didn't need to be repaved, the track literally started coming up during the race. They had this red flag the race on Sunday.
Right.
And go out and put Bondo on the track to hold it together for the rest of the race. So it definitely needed to be repaved, but the drivers don't seem to be very happy that they're reconfiguring the track. And I think it has more to do with the fact that the track didn't ask them what they wanted to do. You know, the track just announced, we're reconfiguring the track. And the drivers didn't like the fact that they claim no one was called and asked, is this a good idea? So it'll be fine. Yeah. You know, these things happen all the time. But nobody wants anything to ever change. And so people got really wadded up about it. They really went after me on Twitter Sunday. That was fun.
Sticking with NASCAR a little bit, with Chase Elliott right now, with what he's doing, but the main thing is what he's been able to do on road courses. It seems unusual for a guy. When you think Chase Elliott and you think, you know, Dawsonville, Georgia, I mean, you think this is the guy that runs around in circles and can just kill you on a restrictor plate track and all that. But, you know, road course, no way. Dude dominates road courses right now. How in the hell is that happening?
He doesn't know. It's funny. We had him on Marty McGee on Saturday morning. And Marty and I've literally known Chase Elliott since he was born.
Right.
I remember his dad carrying him down pit road as a baby at Daytona, and Chase was like 4 months old. And so, yeah, I think he has seven road course wins now, which is third all time.
Yeah.
And granted, I know they run more road courses now than they have before, but he's won almost half his starts. He's won like 44% of his starts on road courses. And so he just said that he thinks it's fun. He admits that, you know, he's basically still driving Jeff Gordon's car and is driving for Jeff Gordon's old team. And Jeff Gordon is, you know, probably the greatest road course racer to ever race in NASCAR. He's number one on the all-time wins list in road racing. And so he says, because he's Chase and he don't want to brag on himself, he says that a lot of it has to do with the team that he inherited and the work that Jeff did. But the reality is he puts in the work. I mean, I talk to the guy at Hendrick Motorsports. He's in that simulator all the time, and he just he loves it. And no one's more surprised than him. That dude grew up racing on short tracks in Georgia.
Right.
And there's not a lot of right hand turns on those tracks.
ESPN's Ryan McGee is joining us here on Sports Call today, 1 week away from SEC Media Days. Got to get into a couple of little pop culture topics with you as well, or movies, I should say. Space Jam's coming out on Friday. How do you feel about that, McGee?
I think it's great. I mean, you know, the same thing is going to happen with Space Jam that happened with, like, the new Star Wars movies or anything they like the new Coming to America, anything they bring back from like 20 years ago, because people my age, they think those movies are for them. They're not. Space Jam, the original Space Jam was made for like, you know, what, 12-year-old boys. And guess what? The new Space Jam is made for 12-year-old boys. And so there's going to be a lot of mad 50-year-old dads because it doesn't stir up the same emotions for them that Michael Jordan did back in the day. But I think it looks awesome. I mean, it's on the HBO Max. I'll be watching it as soon as it drops. And so, no, it looks good to me. Apparently, my nephew just turned 14, and this is what I'm talking about. He's in the target audience for that movie. And he was up till like 3 o'clock in the morning the other night in some lottery trying to buy Space Jam Air Jordans. So so nothing's changed. Back in the day, everybody stood in line at the Kmart to buy them.
I can't wait. The LeBron crowd, the Jordan crowd, and just another way for them to kind of go back and forth over maybe some box office success over this film.
Yeah, it's awesome. No, I think it's great.
McGee, we can't wait to see you next week in Hoover. I know that, look, you're eager to pack, maybe hold off on a couple of days, but can't wait to see you next week, my friend.
Yeah, you too, guys. I appreciate it. And if you're listening, Auburn Painted Dog Guy, I'll see you there too.
We might have to, I don't know how much of a beer drinker you are. Maybe we'll find us a time to get across the road from the hotel and grab a beer.
Hey, I will never say no to that.
We'll see you next week.
I'll buy the first round.
All right. Thanks, boys.